several bills that we haven't been able to get the fiscal impact statements yet, and so we're not going to be hearing them today. 3110, 2928, and 3375. Other than that, we intend to go in order, so we will hear 3434 first. And we will carry over all those bills that I just mentioned. We'll have the first public hearing on House Bill 3434. We'll have a public hearing work session on 3179. And we will have a first public hearing on HCR 18. So, there we go. With that, oh, Representative Greenlick, I think you had a statement to make this morning.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair. Last night I spent what regularly turns out to be the hardest 3 hours of my life as a legislator, listening to public testimony on budget cuts for the developmentally disabled. It's extraordinary to spend time listening to people who are so valiant and so strong in trying to live a life against all odds. And I just came away, I was so choked up by it, I wasn't able to talk at the end of the session where I wanted to make a statement. But it came to me, and I've been brooding about it since last night, it came to me that we're making very important public policy in the human services area by dealing with the budget alone. And I would hope that we try and find a way in this committee to express some opinions about the policy implications of different budget cuts. And I just leave that to us to be thinking about and seeing if there's some way we can pitch into that discussion of the implications of these things.
Thank you, Representative, and I totally agree with you. Thank you. With that, we will open up the public hearing on House Bill 3434. Jennifer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3434 authorizes the transfer of up to $3.1 million from the Community Housing Trust account to the Department of Human Services account for the specified use of services provided to children and adults with intellectual and other developmental disabilities. The transfer amount to be the difference between DHS's general fund appropriation for these services in the 2009-11 and the 2011-13 bienniums. Funds transferred are not subject to allotment control by the Department of Administrative Services and are to be restored to the Community Housing Trust account prior to July 1, 2017. Additionally, any portion of the funds transferred and unspent as of June 30, 2013 are to be restored to the Community Housing Trust account. It modifies the definition of community housing for purposes of funds deposited in the Community Housing Trust account, and it modifies the definition of developmental disability to include an intellectual disability and autism. It modifies the definition of family member to include domestic partnership or legal adoption.
Representative Sarah Gelser, yes, and Catherine White, I think, is signed up.
Thank you, Chair Tomei, Chair Gilliam, members of the committee. I am Sarah Gelser, State Representative from House District 16. Usually I like coming to talk to your committee about bills. Preparing for this bill last night, made it very difficult for me to sleep last night. It is very, very difficult to come in front of you and ask for you to tap the Fairview Housing Trust, which I believe is a pretty sacred promise that we made to individuals experiencing intellectual and developmental disabilities in the state of Oregon. It is not a bill that I was happy to introduce. For several years, the idea of raiding this trust fund has come up. And last fall, many of us that are part of the DD and intellectual disability community started talking about whether or not it would be smarter for us to put forward a proposal to talk about how we would tap the trust. One of my goals with this bill, which I would vote for if it was on the floor, even though I would not like it, is that the governor's balanced budget does include and count on tapping this money. And I do not believe that is something that should be done in a program change bill. I believe that is something that deserves its own bill, and the legislature needs to acknowledge that it's doing at the time that it's doing it. I want to tell you a little bit about Fairview and what that institution meant, what the trust symbolizes to people in the community. And just to take a brief detour, I took a little break last night at spring break for people that have kids at home. My kids are having a good time at spring break. I miss them very much. Wish I could spend a little bit more time with them this week, but we took a little break and went out to Gelato. And I watched my son, who is 16 and experiences an intellectual disability. And I watched him eating his gelato, and I was thinking about some of the testimony that you all had heard last night, and I was trying to imagine what his day-to-day life will be like after my husband and I have died. Where will he live? Who will take care of him? Who will give him the opportunities to do simple things like go to gelato, to go to a park, to not sit in a house all day, to be sure that he is safe, to remind him when he's put his pants on wrong side out and backwards that they need to go the other way? Who will help him brush his teeth? And, you know, all of these little things that are part of his day. And I thought about all of the pieces of his life that are different because he was born when he was born in 1994 and not born when I was born in 1973. If he had been born in 1973 when I was born, it's very likely that he would have been a very prime candidate for the Fairview Training Center, certainly if he'd been born in 1964. And his life would have been very sheltered. It would have been very limited. He wouldn't speak. He would not. I asked him last night what his favorite parts are of his life. It's reading scripts. It's reading books. He wants to go to a Broadway play. We've taken him to Europe. I thought about him standing at the foot of the Parthenon, this intellectually disabled child at the top of the Eiffel Tower. I thought about him walking through Pompeii. I thought about him eating lunch on the streets of Paris, going to the Tower of London. These are experiences that his sisters have and experiences that he would not have been able to have 30 years ago because our culture would have said it wasn't safe for him to be at home and it wouldn't have been fair to his brothers and sisters. And I think about that. I never went to Fairview when it was open. I've had the opportunity to drive past it, and I see it as kind of this imposing structure. If you've never driven out there, it's not too far away. That terrifies me, just terrifies me, because it brings up that question of what if. So about a year ago, as we celebrated the 10-year anniversary of the closure of Fairview, I had done some research. I'd been asked to write a little opinion piece for the Oregonian, and I wanted to share a little bit about that, just to show what this money and what this trust represents. Oregon maintained a board of social control that oversaw more than 2,600 forced sterilizations through 1983. Forced hysterectomies, tubal ligations, vasectomies, and even castrations were requirements for discharge from Fairview up through the late 1970s. In 2002, then-Governor John Kitzhaber issued a formal apology for these human rights violations. Kitzhaber also acknowledged other abuses, and this is a quote from Governor Kitzhaber. Until the mid-1980s, if you could believe that, the staff of the institutions commonly used inhumane devices to restrain or control patients, including leather cuffs and helmets and straitjackets and inappropriately high dosages of sedatives and psychotropic medications. For those of you who were here last February, I had some of those leather restraints and leather helmets on my desk. You may remember those. They're quite frightening. One of them had a production date of 1989 on it. Former residents tell stories of discipline with leather cuffs, cow whips, razor straps, and isolation cages. An oral history project has worked to capture the stories of those who lived and worked at Fairview in their own words. Here are some of them. I was handicapped, but it made me sicker to be there. It was like a prison. Handcuff. Shut door, one said. I didn't like it there. People mean, another said. One resident described what it was like to be disciplined with razor straps. It stings really bad. Others recalled, they were strict at Fairview. You got beat up, yelled at. They put us in closets. They used their shoes to spank us also. If you didn't behave yourself, they'd get you with the scalding hot water. One graduate student assigned to work at Fairview in 1980 described residents being handcuffed to 60-pound blocks and forced to push them up and down the hall. A study published in the American Journal of Forensic Medicine and Pathology found that between 1963 and 1987, Fairview residents were more than twice as likely to die from unnatural causes as non-institutionalized people in Marion County. When the U.S. Department of Justice and the Healthcare Financing Administration came to investigate allegations of abuse in the late 1980s, they were appalled. The agencies immediately decertified the facility and temporarily withdrew federal funding. During the next decade, under pressure from advocates and the federal government, the state developed a long-term plan for Fairview's closure. At 1:15 p.m., on February 24, 2000, the very last resident left Fairview to begin his life in the community. And this is where it becomes relevant to the bill today. The proceeds from the property sale were put into the Fairview Housing Trust. Since 2003, the trust has awarded grants to more than 1,000 people with disabilities for crucial home modifications that make community living possible. Preservation of this fund is a living memorial to the thousands of Oregonians with disabilities who suffered at Fairview. The trust is also a commitment to future generations that their future lies in the community. And we are here today to ask you to partner with us and to acknowledge that we are breaking that promise and we are breaking that trust with this community in the desperate hope of rescuing some of the services that are so important to this community. One of the things that we ask is that in doing this, one of the things that partners with that is putting the Staley settlement into statute, which is, again, just as the closure of Fairview came through a federal lawsuit, the Staley system of services, the brokerage system of services for self-directed supports for adults with disabilities also came through a lawsuit. We'll have that before you for a work session on Monday with zero fiscal on it. We've worked with the department. We also ask that you forward this bill to Ways and Means. We will work with the Department of Human Services and others to ensure that the language is right to fit with the balanced budget proposal, but we would like the opportunity to have this bill on the floor. The individuals who sacrificed so much of their lives at Fairview, the individuals who lost not just their liberty, but their families, their sisters, their brothers, their mothers, and their fathers, some of whom are still looking to find their relatives, deserve an acknowledgement on the floor that we are breaking that promise by tapping this trust. What this bill asks is that we consider ensuring that the money that comes out of the Fairview Trust is actually directly connected to services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. In the governor's plan, it is not yet clear to me that those dollars all flow to developmental disability services. This bill proposes taking $3.1 million from the $13 million in that trust. The governor's plan recommends taking $7 million and all of the interest that is currently in the interest-bearing account from the plan. We would hope that the Ways and Means Committee looks at that very carefully. We would also hope that if these dollars are taken to restore developmental disability program services, that because these are not general fund dollars, and they are not general fund dollars, that these services that are restored not be subject to allotment cuts. Colleagues, the last thing that I would say, and I know that we all have different opinions, and I respect that we all have different perspectives on revenue issues, but about 2 weeks ago on the floor, we voted for bonus depreciation. It was about $93 million that, it was an issue of timing. In bonus depreciation, the money goes out, and there are a lot of arguments for why we should have done it now or not done it now, but my question is, how could we make the choice to kind of give this advance of $93 million while at the same time turning around and breaking the trust and stealing $7 million from the poorest of the poor, the most vulnerable, those that we violated by stealing from their families, forcibly sterilizing, beating with razor straps, and locking in closets? This is a very challenging thing, and it deserves a floor vote, and it deserves a tremendous apology from the state of Oregon to the community that we are violating by doing it. Thank you for considering this bill. I'm very sorry to have to bring it to you today.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of Representative Gelser?
May I, please? Yeah. So this is really a very important issue, and I just have to say, you need to find some other way to get that money. And I mean, this budget is a statement, and it's an inappropriate statement. I think, and the fact that it has to come out of that. Obviously supported that that's the only way to get these services, but I agree with you. I think it's the wrong way to get them. And my problem is that we'll fund education. We won't be happy with that number, but we'll fund that. And then we'll say we have Measure 11, we'll have to fund prisons. And what's left are the most vulnerable of the society. And if there's anything our society's done historically, it's been taking care of these most vulnerable people. Not very well, but it's a historical use. And as you say, I'd be prepared to vote for this if it gets to the floor, but it feels to me we ought to be able to find some other way to do this.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Thompson.
I guess that wasn't a question.
I'm going to follow it up with another non-question. I agree with you. One of the things that we are sidestepping right now that goes back to what you introduced earlier is we have, as a state, not yet had the conversation about what our responsibilities are as a government. And this fits right into that. We have, in good times, allowed the river to get very, very wide in our funding, but it's very shallow. And now that we're faced with decreased revenues, it's getting even shallower, so we're doing desperate things like this. The conversation really has to be about what are we funding that we probably don't need to fund at all right now in order to get back into that central channel of what is our responsibility as a state. I wouldn't even pretend to know the answer to that, but it's a conversation we're not having. And I think your situation begs that conversation again, that, you know, we may have to close down entire agencies before we come out of this slump, but that may be preferential to throwing this group of people under the bus. I mean, I know very well what you're talking about. A good friend of mine took over superintendent of Fairview as a devout Catholic and was faced with signing those sterilization orders and almost lost his job because he refused to do it. And they found another way to accommodate it, of course. That's what government does. But it was a big, big issue, moral, ethical, and everything else at the time. That was the first time I think the public ever knew that was going on. But we do owe these people something for the historical situation that we put them in. And I'm getting a little frustrated with raiding funds because they're there. And we're doing it across the board. And I would hope that the governor would back up and show some additional leadership in how to get out of this instead of let's try to fund everything. We can't fund everything. And it's not going to get better next biennium. There's no projection that says that we're going to come out of this slump and go back into a building phase again. So we'd best, as a legislature and as a government, get ready to bite this bullet. And I agree with you that, you know, if we take this money, we need to acknowledge it and we need to pay it back. But we don't have any money to pay it back with. It's just a different kind of credit card. And I fear that it won't be paid back.
Me too.
Any further comments or questions? Representative, I'm unclear. So your assumption is that this will go straight to the floor and won't go through Ways and Means?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am unclear about that. I've been in discussion with Representative Buckley about this bill for several months. I would be very flexible in modifying the bill and however it needs to be modified, sending it through whatever path it needs to be sent through. But my request and my hope and my request of the folks at Ways and Means will be that we do not accomplish this through a program change bill, that we have this in a straight up bill on the floor and we all take a vote on it.
Okay.
And that we acknowledge it in doing so.
Thank you, Representative. Catherine, good to see you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have very little to add to what Representative Gelser described so eloquently. I brought a number of materials because for many people who weren't around at the time of our struggles to close Fairview through the 80s and the 90s, and the final closure, it is hard to describe the emotion and the passion related to this issue. It is more than simply a pot of dollars to people within the developmental disabilities community. As Representative Gelser mentioned, it really speaks to a commitment. This, even in the best of times, has not been ever a well-funded system. I went through my previous files in this last week looking for some information about what was said at the time of the creation of this trust, and I found file after file of testimony from families looking for family support, trying to build a program to support individuals in the community. We had to sue the state in order to get services, and that was the Staley Settlement Agreement, the most cost-effective way of serving people in this state and in the nation, actually. So what I've included in what is being handed out is a Fairview album, and these are just pictures from a video that we have that shows pictures of Fairview. It was a promotional video, actually, that shows pictures of Fairview during the 60s. And I just want to call your attention to the first page and the series of cribs. Children that didn't walk because they were allowed out maybe an hour or so a day. These are pictures of the institution. Many of the people who've been down here visiting, testifying, spent their childhood in Fairview Training Center. The funds from the Fairview Trust have been used to keep individuals in family homes. We heard testimony last night from a great-grandmother taking care of two children, young children, on the autism spectrum. The Fairview Trust has purchased fencing and guards on windows because those children have a tendency, and this is the clinical term, kind of, they elope. The bottom line, that means they run away. They wake up in the middle of the night and we're going through the windows in the middle of the night and running down the street. Or when she'd open the door, they'd run away. The Fairview Trust has enabled her to make her home safe. So it is that commitment both to the past and to our future. I've also handed out some stories of individuals and how that trust fund has been used. So we urge your support for this bill, and thank you for your serious consideration.
Thank you both very much. Any questions of either of our two witnesses? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming today. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3434 and open up the public hearing on House Bill 3250. Jennifer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3250 directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to issue Keep Kids Safe license plates. It directs ODOT to deposit the net proceeds from the surcharge on the plates to an account designated by the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon Foundation.
Great. Thank you, Matt. And I can't remember what the young lady asked. Okay. Elizabeth Slater, Barbara Balls, and Pamela Butler. Of course you may. Welcome, representatives.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53, and preempt my friends that are coming up next that drove over this morning real early from Deschutes County. Chairs Tomei and Gillum and honorable colleagues, thank you very much for hearing House Bill 3250, which creates a Keep Kids Safe license plate. Chairs and committee members, remember back 2 months ago, the second week of January, when you were sworn in as members of the 76th legislative session. You can remember our training on mandatory reporting of child abuse. By law, we are mandatory reporters. This bill will help fund programs to prevent what we may have to report, child abuse. This is the third session I've sponsored this legislation, as many of you on this committee know. But, honorable colleagues, this is the session to join 30 other states which have license plates to fund programs for children. I've had a lot of support to bring this bill to you today, including my staff, Megan and Josie, Beth Slater from the FISCM lobbyist group, and the Deschutes County Children and Families Commission. They're the ones who came up with this idea over 6 years ago. They have worked on this bill. Two friends have crossed over the mountains today to testify on this bill and explain how confident they are that they can produce revenue. They've developed a marketing plan by looking at other states of how they've done this. So they will produce money to support preventing child abuse programs. I'll close with these brief comments because I know you have a busy schedule, but urge you very much, chairs, to start the process today by holding a work session on this bill and move it to the floor of a unanimous committee do pass vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Boone, can you stick around for a minute to see if we have questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tomei and Gilliam and committee members. For the record, Deborah
Sorry,
Boone.
It's Gilliam.
Gilliam?
I say wrong. Did I say Gilliam?
Yeah.
Gilliam.
Sorry. Vic.
You're not on this mic.
I'm sorry.
Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast. And just as I am here in support of House Bill 3250, as I was in support of the last two sessions' efforts along this same license plates for kids. I sit on the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon, as I have since its inception, and before that I have worked in the prevention sector since the 70s, and when before that I worked in the treatment sector, which was very difficult for me, and I thought there had to be a better way. And way back in the 60s and 70s, we knew that if you could prevent child abuse from happening, you would have children who would grow up happy, healthy, productive members of society. But you couldn't prove that prevention did that. The common comeback was, well, if you don't have a problem, why try to do something with it? So we're here today to support this effort in additional outreach and education about this problem that permeates our entire society. The Children's Trust Fund funds both treatment and prevention programs, primary prevention, and they fund children, Commission on Children and Families across the state. And we do good things. And April is coming up upon us. That's Child Abuse Prevention Month. And you will see signs of it all around. I intend to have a great presence in the building here as we move forward on that. This bill would be a piece of our program to put forth the call to people to keep our kids safe, prevent child abuse. And if you have it on your car and you see your cars driving around with that, it will remind you that this is one of our first and foremost tasks in life as citizens. So I hope that you will move this out and move it forward so that we can begin to start seeing this license plate like we have the other license plates of interest that remind us of programs and our state. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. And a new representative has joined us. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason Conger, representing House District 54, and I don't think that there's a lot that I need to add to what my very articulate colleagues have already said about this bill. However, I just wanted to mention a couple of the organizations that would benefit and have supported this from my district. It does include court-appointed special advocates, Mountain Star Relief Nursery, which I've had the privilege to tour and see the good work that they do, Healthy Families of the High Desert, and I don't believe Kids Center submitted a letter, but I have also been involved with support the Kids Center in Bend, Oregon, and having, again, seen the work that they do and understanding that they are on the front lines dealing with the problem of child abuse and are in a time like many other agencies that do good work, entities and agencies that do good work, where they are seeing an increase in demand, unfortunately, for their services while they're also facing constrained resources. This is a small step to help address that. It's not going to fix the problem, but it does help. And so I appreciate very much the opportunity to come and testify. Appreciate your time and hopefully your support for DuPass recommendation for this bill.
Thank you for coming today, all of you. I have a question. I assume you've seen the revenue impact statement. Have you seen that yet?
There should, Madam Chair, thank you. There should be none. You'll receive testimony. I didn't want to give away or because these people have traveled and worked, but we have, it's $25,000 you have to pay to set up to produce the plant. And we have an anonymous donor who has committed to $25,000. We have that firm. I've asked that again yesterday in a telephone conversation. And then the $10,000 is refunded, and we have two sources for that. We have a source and a backup. So there should be no fiscal on the bill, Madam Chair.
We have a fiscal dated March 11th, and maybe there's something since then. But it does say that the startup cost would be $40,000, and that would eat up all the revenues probably in the first year of operation. But I'm going to leave that up to you to deal with that. Is that appropriate?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I did not know that it was going to. Last time it did not, because we confirmed we had the sources of revenue, Madam Chair, and so we'll check that out again.
Great. And we'll make sure that he gets all three of these legislators gets a copy of that, please. Thank you very much.
That's all right. My understanding.
Double check the committee too, because I don't have one.
Okay. Okay, Representative Thompson.
Just an aside, I totally support this concept, but I would also warn you that if we get this bill passed, don't drop it there. A number of years ago, we had to support our troops license plate that went through a similar process and suddenly disappeared. No one can get it anymore. And one suggestion is there wasn't enough volume to keep it alive, but I don't recall that there was any legislative action that withdrew that plate. So by administrative fiat, these things can disappear once you start them. So you'll want to be very vigilant to keep it alive.
Chairs and Representative Thompson, thank you for that comment. As I said, you're going to be briefly discuss our market plan, which has been created by the Schuch County Commission on our Children and Families Commission. They really have researched this. They're going to do public service announcements and do advertising to be sure people know they can purchase this plate to help prevent child abuse. So I think you'll be impressed with what they've done. And sorry about the license plate that is no longer used.
Representative Gillum, is that right?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're saying we're going to hear a little bit about the marketing plan?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of this panel?
They're going to compete. Today.
Thank you very much, and we'll keep you informed. And we won't be having a work session today. We'll notice it for a possible work session in the future. And so we have three other people, Elizabeth Slater, Barbara Bowles, am I anywhere close? And Pamela Butler.
Co-chairs Tomei and Gilliam and members of the committee. I'm Elizabeth Slater. I work with CFM. People know me as Dave Fiscom's boss. I just
we don't use letters here. We use real words.
So CFM is?
CFM Strategic Communications is the name of our company now. We changed it from Conkling, Fiscom, and McCormick.
Thank you so much.
So, and we represent the Coalition on Children and Families Commissions, the local 36 counties. So we've worked with Deschutes County on this bill. House Bill 3250 creates a license plate to fund child abuse prevention services in the state. It came from efforts by local commissions on children and families to find other sources of funding for services coordinated and provided by these commissions. This is a grassroots answer to our economic situation. The legislature has cut the general fund budget for the Children and Families Commission for the last few sessions, and with that goes some coordination services and some services that they provide in their communities. They're coordinated specifically for the needs of their communities. The local commissions do a very good job identifying and answering to problems in their communities. the same economic situation that requires the legislature to cut these budgets puts strain on families. Vulnerable children are more likely to be victims of abuse during economically hard times. The Deschutes County Children and Families Commission looked for ways to replace those general fund budgets, and one of the things they came up with was this Keep Kids Safe license plate bill. They have, we've worked on this bill for two other sessions. In 2009, the House Transportation Committee passed this bill unanimously out of committee. It had overwhelming support on the floor, and then the Senate ran out of time to hear the bill. So we're trying again. This is sort of an innovative way to replace general fund dollars. It's not going to be it's not the answer. It's not going to save the world. It's not going to save the entire state commission, but it is some revenue that's better than none at this point. And that's what the Deschutes County Commission has been working on. The rest of the county commissions support this effort. In addition to the support listed by our representatives, we have letters of support from the Oregon Sheriff's Association, the Association of Chiefs of Police, and the District Attorneys Association. We also, you should have received a letter of support from Tanya Hunt, who's the executive director of the Children's Center in Clackamas County. She couldn't be here today, so she sent a letter to you guys. Her service center treats victims of child abuse, but it also has prevention workshops and training. And she would be, her organization, like many others around the state, would be eligible to receive funding for those services through the kids plate. Barbara Balls is going to tell you a little bit about what they've done and the research and the marketing plan, and then Pamela Butler will tell you why it's so important to prevent child abuse. Thank you.
I'm Barbara Balls, and I'm a volunteer board member for the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families, and I chair the Child Abuse and Family Functioning Action Team, and I'm also chairing the current committee on the Keep Kids Safe License Plate, House Bill 3250. And on behalf of the Commission on Children and Families, I'd like to thank Representative Wisnett and Representative Conger for supporting and co-sponsoring this bill, and for Representative Boone for speaking this morning. We're very pleased for that support, and as everyone has said, the House passed it overwhelmingly in the last session. We didn't make it through the Senate, but we're back because we believe there's merit in this bill. The purpose of the bill is pretty straightforward. We want to create a sustainable revenue source that can go to child abuse prevention programs. How much money will it raise? We have researched other states that have child abuse license plate, and as Representative Wisnett said, there are 30 to 36 of those that have them. And we've also researched the other specialty plates here in Oregon. We believe that we have the potential to generate $100,000 per biennium. Across the border, our friends in Washington are currently generating $1 million per year. But they are, of course, quite a bit larger than Oregon is. Two similarly sized states, Kansas and Colorado, are generating approximately $75,000 a year. In a recent survey that actually we did about 2 weeks ago, 86% of the respondents said that if they had the opportunity, they would purchase the plate. Also, based on our conversations with other states and their children's license plates, we knew that we needed to have a marketing and promotion plan because we will have to try to work to promote the sales. So we have developed a marketing plan. We have copies of those if any of you would like to take a look at that. The Oregon license plate for Keep Kids Safe will be a group plate, but it will have a special design, much like the Share the Road. The good news about this bill is that it is not going to cost the state any dollars. The startup funds, we have donations on that, and we believe that we're covered on the startup funds, and also from one of our private donors, we've received an additional $5,000 that we can immediately put into marketing. As you know, the purchase of the plate is optional, so citizens can choose to pay the $32 surcharge if they want to support child abuse prevention programs in their communities. And we believe that these investment decisions are best left to local communities, and in order to ensure the revenue generated, we propose a private-public partnership. We have a letter of agreement with the Children's Trust Fund designating them as the fiscal administrator for this fund. The Children's Trust Fund will receive quarterly transfers from ODOT, DMV, and annually, CTF Children's Trust Fund will disperse the funds to the counties. It will be a formula that we will use. Every county will receive the same base amount, and then additional revenues will go out to counties based on their sales of the license plate. Local citizens in those counties will then have an opportunity to direct those funds to their successful child abuse programs. No matter the amount, every dollar can be useful. For instance, if Deschutes County were to receive $4,000, we could train 200 community citizens as stewards of children in the Darkness to Light program, or nearly 300 parents could attend an evidence-based parenting workshop. So we ask you to join, and Beth listed a number of the other partnerships that we have formed on this: the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, the police chiefs, the Oregon District Attorneys, Children's Trust Fund of Oregon, Children First for Oregon, Oregon CASA Network, Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries, Coalition of County Children and Families Commissions. And all of these entities have endorsed the bill, and I believe we have letters from all of them showing their support. And so today we're here to ask your support of this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairs Tomei and Gilliam. My name is Pamela Butler from Children First for Oregon. I'm a Policy and Outreach Associate, and our mission is to make long-term systemic change we just changed our mission statement, sorry, to keep kids healthy, safe, and strengthen families. I know a lot of you have heard from me already this session talking about the lens of foster care, and I'm here today to urge you to support House Bill 3250 that would give the citizens of Oregon the option to invest in child abuse prevention, which in my mind is the starting point of the whole trickle effect you've seen in other committees on kids aging out of foster care, kids being abused in foster care, and all the things that happen to them that could have been prevented at the front end with the citizens investing in child abuse prevention. As a young person who experienced child abuse and as someone who works every day with youth in the foster care system, I know that many of them, if their parents had had the opportunities to get help from relief nurseries, if their parents had been exposed to some parenting classes to teach them how to deal with some of the children's with maybe special needs, special behavior issues, that it could have prevented years of turmoil for the parents and also for the young person who might now today be aging out of foster care at a cost of about $26,000 a year for them to be in the system, and that doesn't include the other costs their parent might have at being on public assistance or possibly being in corrections now. I can't say it enough. I truly believe that prevention is the way to go. I know that our governor stands behind prevention. I'm hoping that we can all move towards preventing this all on the front end so you don't see the bad outcomes in the system and kids leaving foster care. I just urge you to support 3250 on behalf of the children in Oregon and give the citizens an opportunity to invest in our future, and the children are our future. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gillum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all for coming. Ms. Balls, you came over the mountain, correct?
I did, yesterday.
Yesterday. And we have other guests from over? Ah, good. Well, welcome. Thank you for making the effort, and thanks for your work.
You're welcome.
And Beth, thanks for coming as well. I don't know which direction you came from. I'm very happy that we're bringing this forward, and I believe we'll get it through this time. and I'll do what I can to help. But
great.
What I was really pleased about was that you've obviously thought through the marketing side. And as a fundraiser, all of us, and many times our fundraisers, all I want to say is, whatever the design, I'm not a designer, make it simple
yes.
and visible, and it will sell the product, in this case, a very important product. So I just want to encourage you. The license plate itself, I think, will be your best. Well, next to having Josie on your team, will be the best selling tool that you have.
Right.
So I'm eager to get this through, and I'm eager to see the design as well.
Any other questions? So this represents GreenLink.
Yeah, I wonder if, as a part of your research, you researched the proceeds that came from other similar license plates in the state?
We have.
And how have they done?
Well, it varies tremendously, and I don't have all those figures with us. In coming up with our projection of the 100,000 biennium, we took the most recently passed special plate, which is the Share the Road plate, and kind of went on what they're generating in their somewhat infancy period. And I don't have that figure either. But, you know, our projection of 100,000 will be less than some of the other license plate. You know, the Salmon Plate and Crater Lake are still going to be our big ones.
Follow up?
Yeah, but those aren't the same as what you're talking about. In fact, my experience in the Transportation Committee was that virtually none of the plates in the category you're talking about have ever even earned enough to repay the original investment.
I believe that the Share the License Plate or Share the Road License Plate has. The figures I have show that they have paid the investment, that they are making it. And yes, you're right, this is not the same as the Salmon or the Crater Lake, but it would be like the Share the Road plate, which is called a group plate with a special design.
I would just urge, you don't spend the money yet until you find out what you really get.
Right, right. Well, we've had numerous conversations with ODOT in terms of what we'd have to come up with in terms of preliminary funds, and then in order to, you know, we have to reimburse DMV ODOT for producing the plate every year, and I think their charge is about $1 per plate. So we've taken all those calculations into consideration, and we know that there is competition on license plate, and we've heard that from other states as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. You know, I know there's also a cultural trust plate that had been out once upon a time, I think. We had a plate for that. I think that might even still be out there.
I guess
the question I have, because I've heard from, of course, the cultural trust fund folks that they're worried about their funds being swept, and we just heard the Fairview Trust Fund want to be swept. You're saying that this is going to go to a children's trust fund. Is that a sweepable fund? And does this bill, as you're putting it forward, do we have protections in there so that your funds don't get swept?
Co-chairs and Representative Parrish, the Children's Trust Fund is a steward for these funds. The money doesn't belong to them, and so it'll be deposited into. They'll get the money on a quarterly basis, and then they have to distribute it to the local commissions to figure out where it goes. And so, I don't know if the Children's Trust Fund is sweepable, but I do know that they wouldn't be able to take this money because it doesn't actually belong to them. They're just stewards of it. So,
Representative, we have a couple of people from DMV, and we can ask that question. Any other questions? Oh, Representative Thompson.
I would think that one of the other points on this that's kind of an intangible is even if this plate didn't make a lot of money, there's an awareness issue that the more it's seen out there, the more people think about child abuse. And it's just a way to promote the cause in addition to any revenue that may flow in from it. So it may not be strictly a revenue issue
right.
to have benefit.
We agree with that. We think that the visibility is good. I know that when we talked with our counterparts in California about their children's license plate, I asked the woman that I was talking with, I said, if you had difficulty selling this, and she said, well, no, everybody wants to have a children's plate. Why would we have difficulty? So that may not be quite our experience, and that is California, so we have to take that into consideration. But I think the visibility on child abuse in children is important.
Any further questions? Thank you all very much. And we will hear also from Amy Joyce, and I see somebody else from DMB. Are both of you coming up or just one? Okay. Thank you, Amy.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, Chair Gillum, and members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, representing Driver and Motor Vehicles Division, the DMV. Handing out some printed testimony, which goes into some of the background on the plate program that we have in Oregon, and I will hit some of those points verbally since several questions were raised, and then get into the specifics of the bill as well. So in Oregon, we have many plates. We've got the standard tree plate that most folks have, and then we have two fundraising programs. One is the specialty plate, and statutorily that's limited to three plates at any one time. That's the Salmon Cultural Trust and Crater Lake are the three that we have right now. In addition, the 2009 legislature added a sort of limited duration specialty plate. That's the Pacific Wonderland. It's limited to 40,000 sets of plates. Once those are all sold, then that program ends and we're back to the three specialty plates. Then the law also provides for what are called group plates. These are also a fundraising mechanism. Currently, there are 32 active group plates, and these can support nonprofit organizations, institutions of higher education, and veterans groups. Typically, these are on that tree plate background and then have a unique configuration of numbers and then typically also have some kind of decal or symbol on there as well to show the support or that the name sometimes of the group is printed on the plate as well. And the process for that is that the organization or the group applies to DMV, pays some upfront costs, including the application fee that Representative Wisnett mentioned of $10,000. That's a statutory fee. It goes through a process of designing that plate. DMV, in conjunction with the group, designs that plate and then begins DMV begins implementation and begins issuing those plates. The statute says that if the group or DMV sells on behalf of the group 1,000 sets of plates within the first 12 months of issuance, that $10,000 application fee is refunded to the group, again, as Representative Wisnett indicated. And then going beyond that, a group has to sell or renew 500 of these plate sets every year, or that group goes inactive and DMV stops ordering new plates, simply sells out the rest of the stock, and then that group is sort of done. An attachment to the written testimony I submitted has a chart of both the specialty and the group plates that exist today or have existed in the past. On the back of that is indications of revenue and sales numbers for group plates over the years. Representative Parrish, I believe, asked about that earlier. So that information is there, and Representative Greenlick as well. So those sales numbers are required by statute. And then the money that's earned by the group through a surcharge that DMV imposes at the sales point, that surcharge money goes then to the group for their fundraising effort. And as the earlier witnesses testified, quarterly DMV transfers that money to the group, whatever fund is designated, and statutorily in this bill, there's a specific fund that's designated to go to. The statute limits that surcharge. The range is $250 to $16, somewhere in that range, per plate per year. So as a practical matter, the minimum amount for your two-year registration that everybody does with DMV, that would be the minimum of $10 to get that group plate, up to a maximum of $64. And again, DMV works with the group to set that, whatever that surcharge amount is going to be. The Oregon Constitution limits the use of the state highway fund to the construction, maintenance, and use of highways. So because group plates go beyond the basic usage of a plate, which is the registration of a vehicle, and there are additional costs on top of that, that's where the additional funding piece comes in, where the group has to come up with that money. Again, that's statutory as well, in a recognition of the limitation on the state highway fund. And so the statute does require the group to pay those upfront costs. So in terms of the bill, again, this would be a group plate under that group plate section. But unlike most other group plates and like the Share the Road plate, this bill provides for a unique background. So DMV would work with the sponsors in coming up with what that would look like. That raises the costs a little bit above what a standard group plate would be. And again, those costs are paid up front. So that is my prepared testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on the plate program generally or the bill specifically.
Thank you very much, Amy. Representative Greenleg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I read this table correctly, there have been 30 such plates offered, and five of them have made anything over, let's say, $100,000. Two of which were the University of Oregon and Oregon State plates, and two veteran plates. Is that what I'm reading on this?
I believe that's right. And then
25 have not.
Chair Tomei, Chair Gillum, Representative Greenleg, that looks to be, yes, what the chart shows. And Share the Road is approaching $100,000 as of the end of calendar year 2010.
Any other questions? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about the plate program in general. So if there's more about this.
Go ahead.
Okay. The statute state, this is back to the issue raised by Representative Thompson, okay, about the termination of the plates. And the statute states that, read it, if you don't sell or issue renewal for 500 sets of plates for a particular group in any 1 year, the department shall cease production of the plates. Not may, shall. So it's a done deal. My question is, what are the, and there's also a list that you have provided on this one chart that shows those that have been terminated, perhaps for that reason. What are the ongoing costs associated with maintaining a plate once it has been set up, even if it's not selling above the 500? Per calendar year. I'm wondering what the economic consequences to the department would be if we were to amend that.
Co-chairs and Representative Harker, so that I understand your question, amend the piece that says if you don't sell 500, you're okay. I understand. So I believe the economic consequences. Well, I may have to get back to you on this and talk to my experts who issue these things and do the work on the ground. The way the ongoing costs go when a group is continuing to sell and we continue to reorder plates is when a person purchases those plates and there's that surcharge, DMV holds back a small amount, puts it aside so that if a reorder happens, then that money is there ready to go to purchase the next set of plates. Ongoing costs, I would think, and I'm going to get back to you on this for certain, but I would think they would be things like holding stock. Again, we've got the stock of these plates, the specialty plates. There are, in addition to these, other plates that the department issues statutorily. So the administrative costs of holding on to these things, keeping them noted on the website, that sort of administrative cost.
Rent payments to DAS for this storage.
Representative Thompson.
As an extension of that, I'm looking at the plates that have been discontinued, and I understand where you're coming from. Would it be possible to change the statute to allow the continuation of plates as a group? I mean, I can't believe there'd be a lot of the Oregon firefighter plate, for instance, that's not going to sell hundreds of thousands, but I can imagine Oregon firefighters who'd like to have that plate, 25, 30, 40 a year. Would it be possible to hold those group plates in smaller quantity sales if the 500 piece went away? And and you just had this custom plate program, I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding where it would cost you a lot of money to do that. I understand what the statute says now, but I'm trying to find a way out of this in general.
Co-chairs and Representative Thompson, I suppose one cost is, again, once we stop as an active plate, we sell down the stock we have, we're down to zero. There's the cost to reorder a number of plates. And I suppose the policy question is, if people aren't buying the thing, how many do you buy? What's the minimum order from the vendor? And I can get back to you with those kinds of costs and the administrative piece on holding more plates centrally.
Follow up. It just seems some of these, like the Pearl Harbor Survivor, there probably aren't a lot of those around, but I can see where somebody maybe really wants that plate. And if it's a matter of just keeping a file cabinet with these plates in it in case somebody requests them, even if you had to order 500 on a reorder, what are you talking about, a dollar a plate or something? So it's not going to be, and if you hold the money back, it's coming out of that fund. It's not.
Co-chairs and Representative Thompson, so the dollar reference that I think one of the other witnesses made, the charge for per plate, what the department does administratively is we assume that if you were to purchase the tree plate, the standard one that most of us get, that costs about $3 per set to manufacture that. So we sort of deduct that when we order these specialty or group plates. So over and above whatever the tree would cost, that is that holdback piece. It depends what that cost is based on what the design is, that sort of thing. I can suggest to you that with this bill being a special, unique background as opposed to the tree with just a different decal, many of these are actual stickers that we put on to a plate to indicate what the group is. So doing the unique background is going to be more expensive to fabricate those particular colors. But so whatever that amount is over and above, that's the charge to the group. And so to do the purchase, again, part of this may well be what's the minimum order the vendor would require, how much does that cost to get those, knowing if we order, let's say the minimum is a 500 order, and how many Pearl Harbor survivors do we still have that we can reasonably believe might get sold. That's part of the economics of it, I believe.
Follow-up?
We can continue this offline, but I guess what I'm asking is there a way that we might restructure the custom plate program and make it work for cases where there are less than 500, and hopefully the children's plate doesn't fall into that category. But in some of these, I see pride benefit as well as promotional benefit for maybe having some of these plates in lesser quantities if that were reasonably feasible. And if the hang-up is the 500 notation in the statute, then we can fix that. So we'll continue that later, but that's the kind of thing I'm looking for.
Understood. Thank you.
Any further questions? Amy, I have a question. So Share the Road, wasn't that 2 years ago that we allowed that plate, or was it 4 years ago?
Chair Tomei, I believe it was 2 years ago. I'm going to check to be sure. That was before I was representing the DMV. I will check, but I believe it was 2 years.
Okay. So in those 2 years, then the revenue that has gone to that program is $96,000. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, it's somewhat less than that. I think the triple star sort of caveat down at the bottom there is does not reflect reduction of administrative costs before transfer. And so I believe what would be deducted from that is that $1.50, $2, whatever it is that comes off the top for each plate set, held aside for the next time there's an order. I can check on that as well to find out what are the real dollars that went to the group.
Okay, I think that would be really helpful for the committee to know about what we're talking about in terms of income.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Gillum.
What does that parenthetical note mean, collected at issuance only? Are you just saying because you haven't had time to do a renewal on the Share the Road? It's the only one that has that notation, collected at issuance.
Oh, Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gillum. What that means is that the share of the road plate is unique in that the only time you pay the surcharge is when you first get it. Subsequent renewals, you don't continue to pay the surcharge.
Well, because that's the first time it's manufactured. And you just keep the same plate, even if I'm correct?
Co-chairs, it's because the share of the road plate was specifically created that way in the statute. That's how it was set up. A corollary to that, of the three specialty plates, one of them you pay the surcharge only at first issuance, and then it's yours for life, and you don't continue to pay every re-registration. Okay. Two of the others, every time you renew, you continue to pay a surcharge to keep that plate. So it's just how that group chose to have their bill introduced and have that set up. So that's a choice that was made by the legislature when that plate was set up.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much,
Thank
Amy,
you.
And thanks to those who worked on this bill. And we will, we're going to carry this over with a possible work session. And with that, close, unless there's anybody else. With that, we will close House Bill 3250 and carry it over to a public work, possible work session. Thank you. And I'm going to reopen House Bill 3434, and that will also be carried over with a possible work session. Okay, and close that with House Bill 3434. Thank you. Okay, so now where are we? We're going to open up House Bill 3179, right?
That's right. Yeah, we can move it without recommendation.
Right. Yes. Yes. We're going to stand at ease for about 1 minute.
has gone feral.
Okay.
Who's got the license plate thing? There's no Christmas tree. No, why is it her plate?
House Committee on Human Services, and open up the public hearing and a work session on House Bill 3179. Representative, or Co-Chair Gillum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My grandmother actually says it that way, so it's fine. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3179 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Gilliam moves House Bill 3179 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion?
Yeah, I would like to.
Sure, go ahead.
Question. There has been. Does this express a preference on our part? I mean, there's been some efforts to have us not send things to Ways and Means to die. The Ways and Means that we think it's worth hearing.
Yes, this representative, thank you for asking that. This was requested by Ways and Means so they could work it
Excellent.
In Ways and Means. But thank you for asking
thank
that.
Thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For that clarification.
Any further questions? All right. Jennifer, why don't you just read what it says?
Certainly, Madam Chair. House Bill 3179 appropriates an unspecified sum from the general fund to the Housing and Community Services Department for food programs partnering with the Oregon Food Bank. It declares an emergency and would be effective July 1, 2011.
And, colleagues, we decided not to have a full hearing on this because we knew that there would be a hearing
Great.
And would be dealt with in Ways and Means. So that's why we're doing this. So Chair Gilliam moves. Did I already say that?
Yes.
All right, so with discussion, we had that. And any other discussion? All right, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excuse? Absent.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair Fulman.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I close the public hearing on House Bill 3179. I found out that I erred in saying that House Bill 3434 would be held over for a public hearing because it was not noticed. So we are just carrying over House Bill 3434 for a public hearing, not a work session. Close House Bill 3434. And with that, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Do we have a sign up sheet before we start?
Do we have a sign up sheet?
Thank you very much. Okay, it's my pleasure to open up a public hearing on HCR 18. And I'd like to ask those who are interested in testifying, I think I see them over here on the left side of the room, to come right on up. Thank you all for coming from a part of the state that I know, and you can self-select whoever would like to start.
Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lauren Rhodes, representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. It's my pleasure today to have Eric Lindley with us. He is representing Pheasant Point Assisted Living, which is a member of the Oregon Healthcare Association in the great Malala area, and I'm going to let Eric explain the the meat behind HCR 18, but I'd like to encourage all of you to recognize the good work that they're doing in assisted living facilities across the state, and this is a unique program that they've developed, and they wanted to share some of it with you today. So thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Mr. Chair, is that great Malala, she said, or greater Malala?
No, she said great.
Oh, not greater Malala.
Not great.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification. She was correct.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Eric Lindley. I actually live at 950 North Place, North 10th Place, Almsville, Oregon. However, I work at 835 East Main Street, Malala, Oregon. I'm here representing the seniors of our HUGS committee at Pheasant Point Assisted Living and also other Spectrum communities throughout our nation. First, I just want to tell you a little bit about how the HUG committee started. We have a thing in our facility we call current events. So during current events, we discuss current news and things that are happening in our local area as well as across the nation. And we noticed when we had our current events that some of our residents became upset about some of the things that were going on in Washington, D.C., believe it or not. But anyway, so as that, we discussed an idea that we could do something in our own area to make in our own community to make other people feel better about their situation and their life. So we decided to come up with what we call the HUGS Committee. And basically what we do is we look for people either in our community or different organizations that need our help in some small way that we can help those people out. And by doing it, the people that are helping feel good about themselves and the people that are being helped feel good about themselves. So it's basically a win-win either way. With that said, I'd like to read you guys a little quote here. Nothing I can do will change the structure of the universe, but maybe by raising my voice, I can help the greatest of all causes, goodwill among men and peace on earth. That was a quote by Albert Einstein. HUGS Day will be a day that will not only inspire the citizens of this state, but all over the United States. There's HUG committees all over the United States, as you can see from the handout I gave you. It is my opinion that by passing and supporting HUGS Day, it will boost, the morale of the citizens of Oregon in the following three ways. First of all, it will show the citizens of the state that we, as a small group of people, can and will encourage those around us in these tough times to raise up and support each other instead of dividing over issues that seem overwhelming. Second, HUGS Day will encourage those to help their local charities who are really burdened at this time, even if it's in such a small way as volunteering one day out of the year to clean the local park in their respective communities, or maybe bringing some food to their local food bank, or just for making some hats for the homeless in their community. Third, by passing the HUGS resolution for HUG Day June 18, 2011, it will show seniors and local volunteers that even with minimal resources, you can make a big difference in the lives of those around you. Now, in closing, I'd just like to tell you that the best part about this particular resolution is it doesn't cost the citizens of this state a penny, just a vote. Thank you for your consideration of this resolution. We hope you will join us in this goodwill gesture.
Thank you for your testimony.
Representative Tomei and Rep. Gilliam, co-chairs and committee. My name is Tim O'Hara, the Executive Director of Pheasant Point Assisted Living in Malala, Oregon, and I do reside in Malala, Oregon as a resident. I wasn't going to say anything, but I will tell you I'm the new Executive Director of that community, and as a gerontologist and been in the healthcare industry for about 14 years now, it's the first time I've ever been in a care environment where I've seen an older adult population come together to do something positive for the community. I've lived in Malala for about 13 years now, and one of the things I constantly hear in the community is the great things that they do. HUGS is, you know, a hug is a hug, but a hug that surrounds a community and proposes a positive influence on people is something that comes from the heart, and I just want to also, on my end, to say I'm very pleased I am that Eric and his committee has put this together, but I also propose that we do put it on a vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for your testimony. I would just say we had a hearing co-chair and I sponsored back a few weeks. And in some ways, I wish you'd have been here that day, because it was a highlight of what's happening in the nonprofit community, the NGO community, in reaching out to others in various need. This committee hears on a daily basis on the great need in the state right now. We hear from our department and how hard they're working, but how resources are shrinking. I don't know if you were here early enough to hear Representative Greenlick's statement in that regard, and I agree with him as well. It's just nice for you all to come forward with something positive. This may not be the biggest bill we vote on, but this is a great example of what folks can do when they just reach out to others. And sometimes it's a hug. And I know that part of this is an acronym, but part of this is about action. And although Representative Thompson's always begging me for a hug, I'm willing on hug day
right
to give him one.
Yeah.
But I appreciate what folks in this community at Pheasant Point have actually done with their time to reach out. I also appreciate the point about the win-win. Sometimes when we finally stop for a moment and do something for others, we at the end we say, I wonder who really got helped there. And it's a two-way street. So I appreciate you coming. I welcome any comments from the committee. Representative Greenlee.
Mr. Chair, last week in an Oregonian article, Harry Estes named me the Mary Poppins of the Oregon legislature. Yeah. Given that, how could I not be in favor of a HUGS program?
I'm so glad you said that, because I missed that article, and that's something I didn't know. Representative Parrish has a copy for me. Representative, well, just
he got the jump on me, but
okay,
I absolutely support this bill in every way, but is it possible we might designate Representative Gilliam and Representative Greenlick to take the beating in the press on this bill when the derision starts, because they're so good at it already and the rest of us don't need it. But, this is front page material. I can see it now, you know, legislature votes to promote hugs, you know.
I'll carry that cartoon with you.
I will gladly take any beating on behalf of these good folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a great bill.
Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a fiscal on this?
that question is going to cost you.
Do we need a fiscal?
I was hoping for a revenue out of it.
We've received a no fiscal.
Thank you.
A
little surprise.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
And you're here all day with some of the residents and others from assisted living in our state, correct?
Representative Gilliam, yesterday is a very big senior and people with disabilities lobby day, so you will see people all around the building representing these important issues, and we encourage you all to welcome them, and they will look forward to joining all of you in a variety of ways, so thank you.
Thank you very much. If you have any other comments, closing comments, you're welcome.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'd just like to say that if there's any processing fees accompanied with this bill, I'll be glad to pay them for you.
Thank you for that offer. Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Where are we on this?
We do have a public hearing, and we can open up a work session.
Oh, yeah. Desire. I would entertain a work session if the committee is agreeable.
Close the public hearing first. Close the public hearing.
So I'll close the public hearing on HCR 18, which is House Concurrent Resolution, and I'll open up a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 18, and I would entertain a motion.
Is it
Representative Greenlee?
Noticed?
Yes.
There. Where?
Yeah.
Mr. Co-Chair?
I don't see it.
Public hearing and work session. Yes.
Stand up.
Oh,
there.
My God.
Pass it on. Pass it on.
All right, here we go.
Yeah. All right, there we go.
Hey.
Okay.
Can I get a picture? Okay. Sure.
Can I get a picture with Paul?
I'm thinking of the best deal.
Sure. That's right. There you go.
Okay. All right. Here's the press photographer.
Hold on one second.
Let me get off.
Yes, here we go.
Good. There we go.
Come on, hold on one second.
I'm holding on.
The pleasure's ours.
I'm holding on.
It's already been captured.
We have the camera.
It's on TV.
It's on video.
It's already on YouTube.
Yep.
Hold on.
It's not.
One more time.
Oh, well.
Oh, wow.
You can't get enough of this. My phone's just giving me a little bit of trouble. I'm getting it to work.
We had to turn them off for session.
You might have to do it after the hearing.
Yeah, we
have to
do
it later. Okay.
It's not often that an entire committee can make the front page of the newspapers throughout Oregon. We may have just done that.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
I move HCR 18 to the floor with a beat. Adopted recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Tomei moves HCR 18 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Parrish.
I'm sorry, I was so busy hugging my neighbors, I didn't catch if Representative Thompson hugged Representative Parker.
You didn't need it.
That did
Thank
happen.
You for
long
verifying
that,
that.
As long as that happened, then I could probably vote yes.
It did happen.
No, we don't have an audience.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, Matt, would you call the roll?
Yes. Representative White.
Absent.
Now we know why.
Aye.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Gillian.
Aye.
Chair Thompson.
Aye.
HCR 18, receiving the required number of votes, is declared passed.
Yay. Thank you, committee. Thank you, reps.
Thank you.
Good.
Welcome.
You.
And I'll close.
What are the words?
I'll close the work session. No, just a minute.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Representative Greenlink and I will discuss the carrying.
So I have a question.
Hug it out.
We'll
hug it out.
And with that, I'll close the work session on HCR 18 and hand the gavel back over.
Thank
to
you. So is there anything more we need to do, Jennifer?
We would like to open up 3179 to suspend the rule so Representative Parrish can vote.
Oh, right. Thank you so much. We open up House Bill 3179. So. Representative Parrish, would you like to vote?
Yes,
on
thank you.
Matt?
Representative Parrish?
Aye. 3179. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will close House Bill 3179. Anything more I need to do? All right.
If Representative Gilliam and Representative Greenlee co-carry that bill, we have some stipulation of arm's length on the floor because we're in enough trouble already.
Oh. For nausea or what do you think?
No hugging on the floor of the House, you know.
Why am I like that? Oh! No, but carried over 29, 28, and we carried over carried over. Okay, any other business that I have missed or that we need to deal with? Thank you very much. I will close the House Committee on Human Services.